This is the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, Monday, May 23rd, 2022, working session. And I am calling this meeting to order at 6:02 p.m. And roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Here.
Director Babe?
Here.
Director Frumpiller?
Here.
Director Kircher?
Here.
Director Olson?
Here.
All right. Would you all stand and join me in saying the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Can I get a motion to approve the amended agenda? And no need for the executive session.
So moved.
Second.
And roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumpiller?
Yes.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. And we have no education showcase or recognition, so we'll move on to the approval of minutes. May I get a motion to approve 7.1 minutes from the BOE meeting of May 9th, 2022?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumpiller?
Yes.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. And a motion to approve 7.2 minutes from special Board of Education meeting May 17th, 2022?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumpiller?
Yes.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. Now the exciting part that we've all been waiting for, and that is our communications part of the meeting, where we have our counseling team updating us on letting us know what's going on. So come on up. You should sit up there with them.
Well, I'm just.
Or you're just observing?
She's our cheerleader.
Okay. Oh.
You sure you don't want to come join?
Yeah.
Counselors are amazing, and all I do is just tell them that every once in a while.
Oh, okay. All right, so we're done.
Okay.
No,
yeah. That's all we needed?
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
You're amazing.
It's all your floor.
Just sit there and be amazing. So I'd like to introduce it, because I've been the kind of go-between between the board and the counselors and our other partners, Connections for Families and Centennial Mental Health, with a little help from Kristen as well. But this stems out of the board's interest to understand a bit about what goes on for students in our district. To some degree, you guys also have had an interest in what goes on with the staff and what are the different resources that we have, both partners in the community and then also internally. So the direction that I've given to our counselors for tonight is that you wanted to understand how they go about doing their job, the kinds of issues that they see, the protocols that they use, and to give you a sense from their perspective of their job and how they go about it, whether it's kids that are in scheduling, whether it's kids that stop by because they're in, say, some kind of crisis and they want to talk to somebody, what happens when there's a student that's a threat to themselves, any of those kinds of things. So I think they don't have a presentation or a script. And so I think you should just feel free to ask questions as they go along, because the goal is for you to continue to build your understanding of kind of what's going on in our schools, what's going on to some degree with our families, and the different kinds of resources that we have to support our students, especially to some degree our families and our staff. Okay, so that's if you want to take it any direction, feel free to ask questions as they're sharing with you. Okay.
Well, I'd kind of like to hear, I guess, a little bit of an update of how this past year was for you all, working with the students, and were there any overwhelming issues that came up that you identified that we think are going to maybe require more focus over the next year or so, based on coming out of COVID. We're excited about that, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah. So that's
good. Well, I that's a good place to start, I think, because the Children's Hospital actually declared a state of emergency for children's mental health. And I think sometimes we feel like we're kind of protected from it out here, but we're not. We felt it this year big time. I mean, we did at the high school we were talking today, probably 50 plus SRAs, which is a suicide risk assessment. And usually when we have it at the high school, when we have a suicide risk assessment, 75% of the time, it's usually moderate to high, and we are transporting students. So we saw a huge uptick in hospitalizations, and the partnership that we have with Centennial Mental Health and our SRO, Jason, has been phenomenal. Like, he saved us so many times. Last year, when we had a student that was suicidal, they'd end up in our office for 6 hours until a clinician could show up. And so we had no access to our office. And now we just call Jason. He's there in like 3 minutes, and he figures out where we're at, and he can help get the student to Centennial so they can meet with the clinician so they can decide next steps, which I think really covers us as a school district. This is our ruling, but then it's out of our hands when we give it to them, and they get into Centennial Mental Health, and they
make faster help and assistance
for
us, but also the student, and, you know, helping.
They're not sitting around waiting for 6 or 7 hours from someone from Lyman to come to the high school.
Right.
And could you just say a little bit about how they've changed their procedures as well, in terms of where they do those assessments?
So we used to just do Zoom only, for the clinician assessment, but now they actually have a room designated at EPD that someone from Centennial tries to get there, speak with the student in person, which I think is phenomenal, because talking about that over Zoom is extremely difficult for a student, and they don't know this person most of the time. But now that we've established this partnership, a lot of the time students that have SRAs have multiple SRAs, so they know Jason, they know the clinician that they're talking to. And it's a more comfortable process.
So they don't feel intimidated by the EPD.
They're able to actually speak about what's going on, which I think is phenomenal.
Where's your office located?
Mine? So we're actually in the front office at the high school. So there's like the principal's offices, and then counseling is kind of at the end. But it's right when you walk in those front doors.
Remember where you're standing for graduation?
Mm-hmm. We got our robes.
Just down that hallway that faces the front.
Okay.
So they're the last 3 or 4 offices down that hall.
Okay.
The other thing that I understood that happened at SHELP is that because EPD has the capability and space here, that fewer students have to be transported to a hospital for evaluation. Is that?
So usually Centennial will come and meet, and they can create a safety plan instead of hospitalization, which is always our goal. Hospitalization usually doesn't lead to anything but crisis service immediately. And Centennial is able to, at that point, to establish some sort of follow-up.
And a lot of times when they go to the hospital, it's another 3-hour wait.
And
they go through another SRA, and by then they do an SRA with us, they do one at the police station with Centennial, then they do one at the hospital. I mean, this, when they're with us, it's a pretty much all-day event.
Avoiding hospitalization at all costs is the best, because that's not our goal. We just want to establish some sort of long-term service for them.
And I think the pandemic exacerbated a lot of the anxiety and depression that was already there.
Yeah, it did for adults, too.
Yeah. And students are feeling that impact, you know, when they're, you know, thankfully our district stayed in person, unlike a lot of districts, which I think is a huge benefit for the kiddos, because they still had that socialization piece. But at the same time, I mean, at least at the middle school level, we had to reteach a lot of skills, study skills, social skills, time management, organization. I mean, the basics that you'd think they would just already know. And I think just that face-to-face, you know, when some of them did go online or they did get quarantined, then coming back to be face to face with people was awkward and weird. And, you know, they're used to socializing through social media. So that was a huge change, too.
Yeah, I bet.
And I know I've asked you, at least you, this question before, but it's been a couple months. Were there patterns to what was happening in students' life that led to that kind of that place was.
The tipping point. Or,
well, and that was something that I was just telling her. On finals week, I had 3 SRAs alone. Before winter break, we hospitalized 11 students. So before breaks happen, there's a huge uptick in mental health. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they don't want to be at home. They're scared that no one's going to have an eye on them. They're worried that they're not going to receive help.
School is their safe place.
For a lot of them. And so before a break, we always see an uptick.
For sure.
And some sort of mental health. Finals always also cause a lot of stress and anxiety.
And testing.
Yeah.
Really.
But I think other than that, I mean, we see parents in crisis also, and that obviously affects the students. We see a lot of lower income families, you know, lost their job. The help from a lot of the COVID stuff is kind of going away, and we see a lot of people struggling with that. We don't know the parent side of it, but we see the kids. And that's where Connection for Families comes in as well.
So have you guys been able to streamline processes for when children, in a sense, in crisis, come into the counselor's office, the protocol of what actually happens with those kids? Maybe not, you know, they come in and they're saying, I'm having a hard day. Is there a sheet they fill out? Is there a protocol the counselors are to follow? What does that look like?
So, like, at the middle school level, we have a paper form that it's a half sheet, well, it's a full sheet, and then they fold it in half. They give it to the front desk, and it basically is just a form, and we're actually going to electronic form next year. But it's, you know, is it social, emotional, personal, crisis, other, and then they circle which one it is. They put their name, their grade, their advisory teacher. And then we get up to like 20, 30, 40 sheets a day from kiddos. And then we pull them in when we can and meet with them individually and go from there.
When I think of the high school, we started using something called Calendly. And we've actually created QR codes throughout the high school where kids can scan with their phone. If they can, like, my calendar will pull up. Mm-hmm. They can pick a time to meet with me. And then it'll add to my calendar, and then I send a pass.
And I did create a calendar for Tara Schmidt, and she's there for teachers.
That's a phenomenal piece of technology.
Yeah.
But if a student's in crisis, I'm like, don't worry about the QR code. You come down.
Yeah.
They'll tell our secretary, Ms. Burke, and then she's like, we need someone now. And when we look in the alpha, like, because we have 3 counselors at the high school, so we try to match with alpha as much as possible because the majority of the time we've already built relationships with students. And so there's some kids that I know, okay, you need 5 minutes of deep breathing. This is what we're going to go through. You get 5 minutes of music, and you go back to class. Another one is, okay, we need to call home. I think it's very important. We don't have a protocol to meet all because it's not all the same.
Right.
And each student has a different plan. And I think the biggest thing that counselors do is create relationships with students so that we know what to do when they come down.
So do you know what was the average before COVID?
Average?
Like the numbers. Compared, I mean, I understand currently, with COVID, there's a huge spike, but, you know, over the years.
I would say half of what I'm seeing now.
Okay. Okay.
So the SRAs that you're completing, it's about.
Well, and last year was just, it was even crazier.
Off the radar,
year.
Yeah.
I think this year, our students, we were in person last year. So this year is kind of, we're kind of coming back to normalcy, whereas a lot of school districts, I bet, had our last year this year. Because they had students that were just not getting back in person. But I think a lot of it too with COVID is we've seen a lot of school avoidance directly connected to that because now we can just go online. Or I got exposed to COVID and I'm out for 2 or 3 weeks. So there is a lot of school avoidance, in my opinion, from students. Sometimes some kids have COVID 3 times this year or whatever it might be because it is excused absence. And so us trying to get students back in, working on getting them caught up in school, and then, you know, 2 weeks later, my mom's got COVID, I have to go out. Mm-hmm. It's been a struggle. Because you can't say, no, you don't have it. You need to get to school.
And a lot of times we're hearing, too, just the academic piece that's harder and more stressful because during COVID we dismissed a lot of things or, you know, we didn't have state testing, we didn't have... I mean, assignments were still due, but it wasn't as intense, I guess, as it is now. And so them coming back to having this again, they're feeling overwhelmed, you know.
And one of the things that the middle school did that you may be aware of is January, February, maybe into March, is they have an expectation about the number of assignments that middle school students need to be turned in for grading, and it was 2 a week. Right? Mm-hmm. And so what they realized, in as much as anything for the staff, because the staff were giving up their plan time to substitute for teachers that were out because of COVID, so they scaled back that expectation that the students needed to turn in 2 things that were graded to 1, so that it reduced the burden on the teachers, so that they could feel less stress when they were spending their plan time substituting versus having to grade those graded assignments. And so once that crisis was over, then you went back to the previous expectation.
But when we talk about attendance, that's where the DART process, are you guys familiar with that kind of? Mm-hmm. So it's the District Attendance Review Board, and it's with Patty and Connections for Families. We work with the Department of Human Services. So if a student has 5 or more unexcused absences or 10 or more excused absences, they can be referred to a DART process where we meet with the counselor, the administrator, Patty Ann, DHS, and her risk case manager.
Sometimes the SRO too.
Just to kind of figure out what the barriers are to getting to school, why we're not coming to school, and we really try to get parental buy-in. That's our biggest thing. And I have 3 students in particular that I can think of that have completely changed their attendance. Now that parents are seeing, this is serious, and, I mean, we have DHS involved, we have Patty Ann involved, it is kind of a bit of a scare tactic for some parents, but some parents need it. Because this is, it's a requirement for you to have your child go to school, or it is educational neglect, and they need to hear that sometimes.
And Albert County does not have a truancy court, so I know that they were, DHS and Patty Ann Faulkner were talking about maybe utilizing Douglas County.
Or working on getting something here in our district, which I think would be phenomenal, because we have some parents that won't buy in and we still don't see students. Yeah. And they're unenrolling or they're...
You know, I think we had 3 students actually leave.
They still live here. Or we don't even know that.
Well, ours leave and don't show any unenrollment papers. They just kind of disappear.
Do they transition to homeschooling or any idea?
We ask for papers and we won't unenroll them from our system until we receive confirmation.
Okay.
We track them.
Sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't.
And so
if they go to another school, then that school will make a request for records. Mm-hmm. So when there is no request for records, they're kind of in
limbo.
Unknown. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're in the system as in limbo.
And a lot of times if they do go to homeschool, they will unenroll them.
Mm-hmm.
We just need proof of a homeschool program. Mm-hmm.
And what is that proof?
It depends on the program.
Uh-huh.
It would just be showing that it's actually an actual program, not just parents saying we're taking our student. And Danny at the high school is our attendance secretary. She does a phenomenal job with that. So we have just a lot of students that we track, and we have a protocol where Danny calls 3 times, admin calls 3 times, counselors call 3 times over like a 6-week period. And we stop calling at that point, but we still track it with that DHS.
Because at that point it becomes educational neglect.
Mm-hmm. Does that happen at the middle school a lot?
Yes.
Does it?
I wouldn't say a lot, but yes, it does happen. I think we really put in place the DARF system, like we utilized it more this year than ever before. So we have our initial meeting, then we have a follow-up meeting, and usually by the follow-up meeting we've already seen improvement unless they've disenrolled.
And it can also be at the elementary level.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Patty Ann and Connections for Families provide is support, because sometimes they need some kind of support. So the plan, at least in the earlier stages, would often include, well, what kind of support do you need?
And we go through barriers and then what resources do we have.
Right, and it can be, the issues can be just as dramatic in a way at the elementary as at the middle or the high school.
Yeah.
But I've seen one student in particular, he had terrible attendance, he was failing everything. We started the DAR process in this semester, he's had no truancy, he's passing every class. Sometimes it takes 6 people sitting around the table saying, look, we see you, you can do this. And it sounds easy, but is what it took for that student. And it takes a lot of time. I mean, two Tuesdays a month we're in our meetings for most of the day.
If you think about it, if you put yourself in a student's perspective, it doesn't matter what age group, and you know, let's just say for very good reasons you've missed school, and then you're thinking about or you go back, you're not, your membership in the community, whether it's a fourth grade class or your classes at middle school, you're a little bit outside of that group. You're not, you know, you're not where they are with the content, you're with the other students. And so it can be scary for the kids to reintegrate, and the more that they kind of bounce back and forth of being in and being out, the emotions that the student has about going back can often be a barrier, and a contributing factor in addition to whatever other issues that might have caused it in the first place. So that's where understanding what the barriers are and then trying to help them overcome and to be, in a sense, reintegrated and get back into the flow of what's going on, both content and the social dynamic.
I mean, we approach it in a very supportive manner. Like, we're here to help. How can we help? What can we do? What, you know, things can we put in place?
And then as the kids are moving up from elementary to middle school, then the elementary schools are going to communicate to you those kids that have had issues in, you know,
so
similar.
We always have a transition meeting,
yeah,
towards the end of the year where we meet with elementary counselors, it used to be where the teachers were meeting with them,
mm-hmm,
but we feel it necessary just for on the mental health piece that counselors meet with the other counselors.
Right.
And then we do that with the high school too.
Yeah. Okay.
Just to kind of give them an idea where the student's at, what's going on.
Right. Continuity of care,
mm-hmm,
kind of thing.
And you guys, actually, you met today, right?
Yeah, we had a district council meeting today.
So you guys meet normally on a
monthly
basis. What kinds of things do you guys do collaboratively?
Talk about suicide risk assessments, threat assessments, our protocols as a district, DARBs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We sometimes, if we're struggling with the student, we don't know how to help, we can talk to them, kind of bounce cases.
Mm-hmm.
Families to watch out for. Resources that someone might have access to that we don't know about.
How often are you guys reaching out, say, beyond the school and not including, say, something in mental health and connections for families? Are there other resources that you're able to tap into? Do you have to tap into them very often? Or is that pretty much the main partners?
That's primarily the ones that we utilize out here just because it's convenient for families. But coming from DHS out here, I have a lot of resources that I utilized when I worked in the Department of Human Services and Child Protective Services. And then, I mean, it also helps because my identical twin sister is a probation officer with youth infractions, and my older sister is an assistant principal at another school. So any resources I get, I'm always like, this is what my sister sent me, you know, just so we can, everybody's on the same page and we have access to those resources. And they do the same, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we work with that,
yeah,
all the time.
That's our primary connections for family and sometimes mental health.
Yeah, I was impressed with their presentation to us. I had no idea. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they've been a huge resource for us. I mean, it, as small as we need backpacks and school supplies to we need help with suicide risk assessments, you know, and things like that.
Yeah. Great.
You know, in the past, and this is more during the recession, that the staffing at Centennial Mental Health, that they had open positions, they had
turnover.
It's my impression that that's not been an issue, but I'm just curious from your perspective whether you've seen more stability there.
I have, personally. We actually are looking at getting a school-based therapist next year from Centennial to work with a student if they have barriers to even getting to therapy, that we could offer it during like a study hall period or something. and that person has stayed the same this entire time, so that contact for me has stayed the same. A lot of the individuals coming out doing the clinic, like the clinicians, are the same. I haven't seen a lot of turnover this year, at least.
Yeah. It's been better this year, for sure. And that's another thing that I had written down, too, is that's something we're looking into for next year, is bringing in an on-site therapist.
I know I've been signing some MOUs with Centennial Mental Health from the district perspective for the schools. So I haven't been keeping track of which schools, but I think I recently signed one for the high school. But is that the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I may have signed one for the middle school.
It was middle school at City Hills.
Not the high school.
We haven't utilized it this year.
Okay.
We just didn't have the ability to set it up. I have a meeting actually this week.
And then also a part of Connection for Family is RISC. It's the 18th Judicial. So they work with more of the at-risk kids for attendance, for
usually
behavior, acting out in the community.
Do they go to, is it the Arapahoe County facility on Broncos Parkway, is that where they, when they are, it's part of the 18th Judicial District, or do they?
So, Jolene, what is her last name?
Funkhauser?
So she'll actually come out to our school and do the interviews with the kiddos.
Okay.
And she'll do the assessments.
Yeah. Okay.
So think of it as a multi-agency support for kids and families. When the kids are either in trouble with the law or potentially in trouble with the law, and the RISC is like a program underneath, it's a part of what Connections for Families does, and they have specific funding for it, what's called a RISC coordinator, and that person specifically works with families to help keep them out of the more black and white consequences of the justice system. So you could think of it as, sometimes it's called the diversion program.
Or pre-trial.
Pre-trial, mm-hmm. Which says, okay, rather than just a long judicial system consequence, it's, okay, if you do community service, if you seek counseling, if you do these
second chance
things,
program.
Then you don't go down the traditional path with the law enforcement and the justice system. And that's the RISC coordinator's job, to help with that kind of alternate program, mm-hmm. second chance. Because what we like about that is that students are learning. And if students were perfect and they knew everything, they wouldn't get into trouble. Right, but they do.
Yeah.
So part of our
I knew everything.
Our job with disciplinary stuff is that they have consequences and they can learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all about punishment.
And then we have a sit down meeting with them too. Like, what did you learn from the program? And I mean, they're educating me on like, well, I found this out about this specific drug, and if I continue doing this, this is what will happen with my lungs and stuff. So they're educating us too, you know. Mm-hmm. So they are getting something out of the program.
That's great. That's terrific. Well, I applaud what you guys do, because that has just got to be really tough. And today it's even harder than in the past. And, you know, I mean, I go back to my high school days, and I don't think we ever had a need really for, you know, but that was like, that was
just
only,
a couple
that
years
was
ago.
15 years ago. Yeah.
So how many of the problems that you were seeing are related to substance abuse?
I don't have a significant amount of high school.
Okay.
I mean, it's a lot of vaping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And occasional marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Or occasional alcohol, but I don't see a huge uptick in any sort of explicit drug.
Yeah, that is phenomenal. Given
the first, but we've seen no first.
Given the fentanyl issues.
Scary.
And
that's
yeah.
something actually that I've educated my students on, that I know are a little bit more exploratory in their weekends. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not afraid to educate an individual on what fentanyl is. It's a very scary thing. You should be very careful about anything you put in your body. And they listen. They act like they do.
I hope, you know, just
being a teenager.
I saw in the news, I think, two the parents of two students that were taking what they thought was another, just a not over the counter, but a prescription drug for stress. I don't remember what it was, but they it wasn't that at all. It was 100% fentanyl, and boom. You know, just
you don't even have a chance.
You don't even have a chance, and they're buying it from their friends.
Up to 2 grams
and
can be lethal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Colorado's number two.
Yeah.
So
that's right. So, well, thank you guys very much.
Before we go,
yeah.
What's the bright side? What made you happy this year? What are you most proud of this year?
Right, and I had something actually else to bring. Mm-hmm. I've presented to you guys 2 years in a row now about Frontier, the absorption of it into the high school. And that is my bright side, by all means.
I love
working with these alternative students. We have actually grown the program. So when I started, the program had started, and I created a schedule for one teacher. It was Mr. Bates, and he actually came from Frontier.
Right.
And it was the first week, and we were getting Frontier, and we made the schedule and made it happen. And this next year, we've actually grown to 40 students, and we have 5 teachers. They're not 5 hired teachers. Mr. Bates is our only specific alternative teacher, but we have 4 reg ed teachers that are passionate enough about alternative students that they've created classes separate from theirs, which I think is phenomenal. And we meet needs of students that would not be met otherwise due to the closing of Frontier.
Yeah.
It is a lot. I'm the alternative counselor, and I meet with them probably 30% of my time. There's 40 of them. So it is heavy, and they require a lot more due to social, emotional, and their home issues. They're vast, and a lot of them likely would have been at Frontier, but we get to keep them, and I think it's great. And seeing their growth, we had 3 seniors graduate this year that when I met them, there was no way that was going to happen. And we made it happen. And I cried at graduation. It was phenomenal. And seeing this year, the student that we had, Darb, he's an alternative student. He was disengaged from school, didn't care. He was actually smoking pot. And this year, he is passing all of his classes, getting on track. He's going to get his EMT. He's actually in the CNA program next year at the high school. So just seeing these students completely turn around is absolutely a bright spot in my head.
I would say for me is just kind of similar. We had a student who bounced around from like 4 different schools, and we were told horror stories about her. And I think just building a relationship with her, establishing trust with her, understanding her, because she is not like your typical middle school student. Just building that relationship with her and understanding her language and what makes her tick, and just seeing her go from this angry, mad, telling our assistant principal she was going to stab him with a knife in the eye and threatening kids and leaving the school and getting into physical altercations to this completely different kid where I'm like, who is she? And I think it's just, honestly, with her, it came down to your approach with her. If you were direct and stern and aggressive with her, she was going to give that right back. If you showed care and compassion with her, she was more willing to work with you. And if you gave her options that you could live with, she was more apt and willing to take one of those options. And then also, I was going to just kind of speak to the CASEL program, the 5 competencies that we've really tried to incorporate, which is, so CASEL is Collaborative for Academic and Social Emotional Learning. So really talking about self-awareness, social awareness, relationship skills, what are the other ones? Decision-making and self-management. Those 5 competencies we've really tried to incorporate into, I think Brett may have spoken about this, the principal talks that he holds, you know, assemblies with, so he also has the counselors present as well on social emotional learning, mindfulness, like grounding techniques, just keeping kids in the present, having a growth mindset. That's been another huge focus for the middle school, having a growth mindset opposed to
a fixed mindset, instead of saying, I can't, I can do this in the future, you know, just changing their words can change their mindset. And then really, we really up the ante with our MTSS program.
What is MTSS?
Multi-tiered systems of support. Sorry, all these acronyms. It used to be called what? Response to intervention.
RTI. Yes.
RTI. So just putting in place, you know, the universal accommodations for all kids, and then moving up tiers to based on student needs.
A lot. Yeah.
So I think I know the answer to this
and
question.
And incorporating it with HTI.
Incorporating.
That's been helpful. Yes.
Yeah.
I think I know the answer.
Well, then that was part of Brett's presentation for when we had the HTI meeting, right? Mm-hmm. And that was very impressive.
I mean, and that really does fall into the five competencies too, with effective communicator, empathetic. That was
either
entrepreneur, all of that
later. So I think I know the answer to this question, but it's a kind of follow-up to Craig's, but it's slightly different. Do you like your jobs? And if so, why?
I love my job. I love it here. I love the small town. I love that there's autonomy here to... Opposed to the larger districts, which we came from the same district, it was very, I don't know how to phrase it. It was very political. It was very intense. It was very uptight. It was here, there's more freedom I'm at a loss for words. There's more freedom to...
I think it's focus on the kids.
Yeah.
And not get caught up in...
the politics. Yeah,
the hierarchy of a school district. You're just here doing the work.
Right.
Boots on the ground.
Yep. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. I've been in school.
You don't have to say that because he's...
Well,
you know.
I wouldn't be here, but I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
This is my sixth year in schools, and I think we have great kids. I worked in DPS before this, and I worked in a much different school. It was like a severe needs school, but I see our students, and I see our community. I feel invested in this community, and I want to continue to see the growth that I've seen. So I absolutely love the core that is what makes Elizabeth School District. And I love what I do. I love that I get to know students the way I get to know and support them in achieving things that they didn't even know that they could.
Yeah. Wow.
Are you from Elizabeth area?
I moved out here 7 years ago. I actually grew up in Palisade.
Oh, nice.
Still a small town, Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah.
My high school was about the same size as Elizabeth. Same kind of community. So coming here, I mean, there's peaches there. They're not here.
And wineries.
And wineries.
Yeah.
And marijuana now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think that's a trifecta, apparently.
Yeah.
But it's very similar feeling. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely love being out here. I've been here for 7 years now. I actually live in Castle Rock now. But my students go to school, or my kids go to school in this district, and venturing elsewhere.
Good. Agree. I mean, and I came from a low socioeconomic, high generational poverty school. So I worked Pueblo, Falcon, Fountain Fort Carson. So just the kids, you know, again, low socioeconomic, high generational poverty. I interviewed here, and this was, what, 7-8 years ago, and students were, like, opening the door, ma'am, can I hold your bag for you, come on in, what are you looking for? I mean, it was just, like, night and day from what I was used to, so it's been a nice change.
Yes.
I do miss the alternative kiddos, though. I do.
Well, maybe you
I came from
collaborate.
Alternative school, so.
Yeah.
Collaborate, you know.
Yeah. I connect really well with those kiddos.
Well, you're sending me some of them. So.
She's your feeder program.
Yes, she is.
Well, Casey, given that we have you here and you brought up the alternative, could you just say a little bit about the alternative? It's something that I don't know, so I...
Yeah.
Because I know that the program has been evolving. One of the dynamics of having an alternative school was you were in the high school or you were in Frontier.
Yeah.
And it was one or the other. And that one of the ideas when we were starting the program at the high school was that a student could take advantage of the resources, the alternative resources at the high school, like a lot or medium or little, depending on the need. So maybe a student just needed an alternative math class, but didn't need to be kind of in the alternative program. How is that how it's working? You said there's 40 students. Are there 40 students who are all in? It's like one size fits all for those 40 students? Or are there, is there kind of a gradation of, you know, from a student perspective, are they, you know, does...
Some of the different tiers.
Yeah.
Well, and that's where I say it takes a lot of my time. It does. These students all have different needs, and we're understanding where they need. And we actually just got a conceptual math class, which is the gap that I was looking to fill, and we filled it, which I think is phenomenal. We actually hired the old math teacher from Frontier at the high school for a math opening, and she was willing to teach a conceptual math class because a lot of our students do struggle with math. But we have a high-achieving student, and he does phenomenal in all science classes and all lit classes. So he's in college prep lit, and then he's in alternative program social studies, because that setting works better for him. And then with that, in the alternative program, they get me as their counselor, no matter what their last name is, and then they have Mr. Everhart as their administrator. So there's congruency in who they see. There's a team aspect. So everybody that's in the alternative program, we have alternative program meetings, and we have alternative program team building, because a lot of these students feel, like you said, disconnected from this community or disconnected from school as a whole. So we need to find a reason for them to buy back in. If that's taking them on a field trip. I mean, I went on a field trip with them, and we went to like an aerospace engineering plant, and these kids got to see how, you know, they helped build NASA rockets. These kids have never been to downtown Denver. They're all like freaking out on a bus. It's phenomenal. They're like, these are the biggest buildings they've ever seen, and they're 17 years old. So there is a different tier of each student, and understanding where they need and what they need, I think, is the struggle that we have, trying to integrate them into everything and keep them apart at the same time, because 40 kids together all day that already have behavioral issues can be really difficult. So it's been a bit of a scheduling thing, but we've done it, and it's actually worked a lot better than we thought. We've created conceptual integrated one, conceptual physical science, which is their freshman level, conceptual biology, and then Mr. Payton's kind of ran wild, and we have global crime and warfare and the medieval world, and these students are engaged in social studies, science, math, and literature in a way that they haven't been in years. We have a freshman that came up, and he hadn't passed his, like, a class since fifth grade, and he came up, and he didn't pass everything, but he was engaged in school in a different way. He built relationships, and he wants to be there next year. So I think it's a win.
And really, you built this program from the ground up.
Yeah.
So when you say conceptual, what does that mean?
So instead of
tradition,
reading a textbook, mm-hmm. regurgitating it in a test, being lectured at for an hour and a half. So realistically, a lot of these conceptual classes are where we're headed with HDI anyways.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of hands-on, a lot of real-world applicable.
Project-based.
So not really the direct instruction.
Not as much. Mm-hmm. There is some, obviously. You can't get around completely getting rid of it. But a lot of it is, so in warfare, they create, you know, a war of their own, and then they have to present it to the class. So it's also student-led and in engaging their peers. And our conceptual literature for our seniors, they actually built websites of four careers that they were looking into. They researched those careers. They interviewed individuals in the industry. They reported back on it. They had to present it. So it's just more of a, and like in the science, it's experiments. It's
mm-hmm.
working with physical science. And what happens if we do this instead of reading a textbook and taking a test, which these students, well, they just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So more for the kinesthetic learner.
These kids, a lot of them need to move their bodies.
So you call it conceptual, and Shannon said project-based. Would it would it be as another way to think about it, project-based?
And it's so individualized, and that's where our teachers that have been involved in this have been instrumental. I say I work a lot, but without them I couldn't do anything. They're developing one-on-one projects for each student that we know this student has a strength in this, so let's really emphasize this, and this is a gap that I know I need to fill. Ms. Horton will sit down with each student one-on-one for 15 minutes every day she sees them to work on filling in skills that they've missed or integrating this project into what the standards are.
It is. It's great. All right. Any other questions, you guys? No? Well, you guys, thank you very much for your
thank
time.
You.
Thanks
I really
for having
appreciate
you.
That. That's great.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
Better anyway, right?
Yeah, it turned out better anyway, so.
Oh, good. See, we're not so bad, right?
No.
All right. Douglas, you're on.
Kristen has adopted the strategy of giving me more time.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you for all you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and have a great summer.
Do support us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Don't forget those zeros on there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't have a lot to report. I do want to thank all of you for being there for graduation. And nobody takes it for granted because things come up in people's lives, and so it was just great that you were all able to make it, be a part of that. I wasn't able to see all of you afterwards. I go and hold the door open on the other side of the brickyard, and one of the reasons that I do that is I kind of get to see who's come to the graduation and kind of get a sense. And I'm continually surprised at how many people on oxygen, with canes, in wheelchairs, mm-hmm. The number of babies, the number of people that walk slowly because it's an effort that come, which you can't tell when you're sitting there. You don't mm-hmm. see that. And so I feel a sense of appreciation that they came because it wasn't, you can kind of
easy.
Tell, wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. And then what happens, I mean, people, like Shannon said, they say thank you for holding the door, but a lot of people will comment on the ceremony, and they really like the ceremony, and this is true every year. Some people will say they like that it's short, but some people won't. They'll just say, you know, it was a great ceremony. And thanks for being a part of it. Thanks for supporting it. I you know, I've been to other graduations. You probably have all been to some. And whenever I go to others, I'm proud of ours. I'm proud of the student focus, the graduation speakers, the valedictorians. I just, you know, I couldn't hear them well. I think on the stage it was hard to hear them. But the feedback that I got was that they liked student focus and what the students said, and that it was short. So I think that it's such a public event for us, and that it takes so much coordination to bring off well. And I think it was one of many things that is a good example of our community, our school district, and the high school in particular, and our students. In 13 years, I've never seen the students at the ceremony do things that they shouldn't have done. Maybe that my memory fails me back many years, but been to many where they have blow up things, beach things, and they throw them around or whatever. You know, the fact that we have water bottles underneath each student's chair says two things. One, we care about them, mm-hmm. right? We want them to stay hydrated, but we're not concerned that they're going to do silly things with the water bottles. Other districts, they won't put the water bottles there because it's a potential hazard. So, you know, it took a lot from counselors, from admin, from secretaries. Stacy Weber, it was her first time doing it. as you know, there was, or maybe some of you don't, there was one person whose name was supposed to be read, but it wasn't read. It was on the podium to be read, but the folks that read the names took their lists from the seating chart, and because the person wasn't there, their name wasn't read. And that was an oversight. We tried to help rectify that by putting that person's name at the end of our graduation video that Jason produced. I don't know if you've seen it yet. If you haven't,
I haven't.
Take a look at it. It's really nicely done.
Okay.
And so we put a still slide that recognized students that were either already in the military or were going into the military. Mm-hmm. And that student couldn't be there because they were graduating from boot camp.
Right.
I think that day or the day before. So that was, and the sound was, it had been tested and everything,
yeah,
but they got that fixed.
Up.
I think everybody had a little bit of a heart. It's like, what do you do if you can't get the sound? I had overseen it before when they even started. Who knows? But anyway.
But that was a minute.
Yeah. So the work of the district is to finish up the counselors, the admin, the office, do a lot of work here this last, especially this upcoming week, closing out the school year, and then also getting ready for next school year. And then hopefully everybody will be able to take some time to disconnect. It's been a demanding year for everybody, and lots of good things that have happened. So Jason has been running ragged, poor guy, trying to capture all of the things that have been happening. And one of the reasons that he dedicates so much time to that is that it's hard to keep track of everything, and it's hard for him to keep track, but it's a way not only for the community to know what's going on, like our parents and so forth, but also the staff, because the staff in one school may not know what's going on in another school. And so it's a way to communicate, good news that's happening in the district as well. So I'd just like to publicly thank Jason for all his work on that, because poor guy has just been, last week we were crisscrossing each other. It's like, oh, where have you been? Where are you going?
Right, yeah.
He was able to tell me some things that were happening that I didn't know about that I was able to see.
And I want to put a thank you out to Jason, because he took some wonderful pictures of me hugging my daughter that my family overlooked in taking, which I wasn't happy with them. And then, I have all these people there and nobody took any pictures. Mm-hmm. And I was devastated. And he took some amazing pictures of me and my daughter, and I so appreciated it. It was it was amazing. So phenomenal.
Have all of you seen the video thing?
I haven't yet.
No.
I shared it all.
When
all
did
of
it,
Ober
when
County
did it,
knows
when
about
did
it
you,
now.
When did you load it?
It went out.
Well, I was busy spending money.
Yeah, and there's the most. There were a couple of typos in the version that was sent directly to you. So if you want the most recent version, you just go onto the website and it'll have it there. There's just a couple small differences.
To get a better grade?
Pardon?
To get
a better
grade,
right.
Yeah.
Extra credit.
Yeah.
There's some nice pictures of the board there. So, I think.
Nice.
I got more.
We were talking about that, you just mentioned all the activities, all the different activities that are going on all the time and at the different schools and everything. Is there, you've got the good news bulletin, these are things that are coming up, and we have our education showcases where they talk about, upcoming events. Is there a way for us to know, Heather and I were talking about it, that, she said, gosh, I didn't even think about it, but it would have been nice to go to the fifth grade graduation, or it would be nice to, Douglas is always going to these places, to the sporting events and all that kind of stuff. I did get a schedule from him when I asked earlier in the year, you know, a little that little fold-out little schedule, or maybe it was from
Crystal. Just the athletic stuff?
Yeah, just the athletic stuff, but that was just the athletic stuff.
So part of your email, you have an event calendar. You might have to go in and check a box to turn it on, and I can help you do that if you need. But I upload as many events as I know about. Between Douglas, Jason, and I think we have a good feel for that. And then any sporting event for middle or high school that is a home event, I'll put on the calendar as well. I don't put the away games.
Oh, so it's in, so it's technology that I need to, what you're saying, I'm...
So in our Gmail, there's an events calendar.
Yeah, in your calendar. And after the meeting, I'm happy to pull up the computer and show you. I might not be speaking correctly, but I'm almost like 90% positive. The calendar that I update with that information also populates the front district website calendar.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and the things that are on that.
Correct.
Okay.
I just was telling him, I was sitting there at the fifth grade graduation and kicking myself going, oh, this would have been a cute thing to invite the board to. And had I thought about it, I knew the kindergarten graduation was an hour earlier. If I'd really thought about it, I would have gone an hour earlier and just been there for that, because it's such a cute little presentation. They have it, I'm sure both of the schools have it, and something, you know, like that would be really nice.
Yeah, we had some cute pictures of our granddaughter graduating, and they made their own cap and oh, perfect.
That's the calendar. Okay. The district one.
Yeah, well, okay. Right, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
No, that's good. That's awesome.
Because I got it. Months ago.
Yeah, and I do keep a very close eye on it, especially with the sports.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
Oh, it's great. If anything changes on any of the home games, I get a text and an email for every little change.
I went to Canada right there, but it's not awesome.
But.
Okay. Well, show us. Cool.
So two other things I wanted to share with you. One is that the high school is making progress on the automotive program. If you haven't seen, the modular arrived, which is cool that it arrived so, it's to me, so early. And they've been working to get that all installed. It's a lot of work to place it, to connect it, and do all of that. So that progress is underway. The other thing that's very typical this time of year is staff changes for a number of reasons. So some people are retiring, some people are not asked back, some people are moving to other jobs, either in education or outside of education. And so Ken and HR and our principals and directors are busy posting positions and hiring. Elizabeth and most districts in the state are experiencing an unusually low number of candidates. So whether it's rural, large, small, districts that are used to having 200 applicants for elementary position are seeing significantly fewer. There are districts that receive no applicants for positions. So it is a labor shortage crisis for education across the state. And it has a number of factors. It's not just education that's having labor issues, but
that's everywhere.
Schools.
Mm-hmm. That's just everywhere.
Yeah.
Everyone's having a shortage.
Philadelphia, they lost 880 teachers just that resigned at the end of their school year this year.
So the thing that's, it's probably worth repeating, through Ron's leadership from a fiscal standpoint, Ken's work from an HR perspective, that we increased our salary schedules to the extent we did. Licensed staff, 6.97% on average. classified staff 7.5%.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Approximately. Coaches, I think we ended up increasing coaches 12%. They're not paid a lot, so even though it's a higher percent, it's off a smaller number.
All staff, whether it's food services or custodial, they all got
yes and
a?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So when we say averages, so it's easier to do averages for the teachers, and they're all on a schedule, so Ron can tell you how we come up with the average. But there are some that get more than that because they have a lower starting pay, and those with a higher starting pay get less because the change was an increase to the base of $2,500.
Okay.
So they saw that plus their step, and that's right. Where that number comes from. When you get to classified, the differences are greater because some positions were increased, I'm going to make up a number, 5%, and some were increased 10%. I don't know the actual numbers, but you get an average of 7.5. The ones that were increased, say 10%, were positions like paraprofessionals, special ed paraprofessionals. Why? Because those are incredibly hard to fill and to maintain. So that was a particular job category that saw a bigger increase. Another job category that saw a bigger increase were bus drivers, because those have been difficult for every district. Mm-hmm. Every district special ed paraprofessionals have been difficult. So, so those numbers
so
are
just like
average.
Food
service was
like, does food and bus drivers and paraprofessionals, did those fall into what was the category called?
Classified.
It? Classified. So would that also include preschool?
Yes.
Is classified. So the ones that aren't classified are basically the teachers, like full-time
yes.
teachers?
They're licensed.
Counselors.
Administrators.
Okay.
No, administrators
they're a separate.
Are licensed,
separate.
But they're administrators.
Right.
So there's
like
three
APT.
General
yeah.
job categories. There's administrators or people that have a contract.
Right.
As the general referred to. And they typically have a license of a couple of people that are in that category that don't. Then there's licensed, which are special service providers for special ed, counselors, and teachers.
Right.
They're all, that category, they're all required by the state law to have a license to do what they do.
And it was by, by section, right?
Pardon?
It was by section, like coaches
yes.
across the board. They're getting whatever, 15%.
It was 12%.
Or 12. Administration 5
yep.
or whatever. So it's across the board, the entire
department is what
Thank
you're
you.
Asking.
Thank you. Yes.
So I have to say it's the classified staff as a whole, the estimate was as an average was 7.5%.
Okay.
But I can say there were some that were intentionally more.
Because maybe their base?
Because they were hard to fill.
Oh,
hard to fill, lower
okay.
salary.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was done intentionally in the sense that, like, if everybody had to get the same increase, it would have made the increase smaller. And
yeah.
made it harder to attract certain positions.
That were having a hard time filling.
Exactly.
Okay.
So... So the coaches, so the schedule, we know there's one schedule for coaches, and there were a couple of changes made to it. One, it was tied to a base before, and that base it didn't make sense, so we got rid of that, and then like certain percentages of the base, so we got rid of that. And then all the salaries were based on years of experience.
Right,
and
right.
across the board, they were increased, I believe, by 12%.
Or all the... I'm assuming by this point all the employees know about the increase? They were told what their increase would be?
No.
Oh, no.
They weren't told a percentage. They were given a contract or a notice of assignment.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. So
yes.
by this point, the end of the year, they all know what they're going to be making
yes.
next year.
Yes.
Okay.
One question.
They
no, go ahead.
Well, they all receive either a contract, and that's what happened after your last board meeting, is once you did two things in the last board meeting that were important, and they happened together, which isn't ideal. Preferably, we'd ask you to approve the salary schedules, and then after that, to approve contracts and notices of assignment. But because the we really wanted to have the biggest increases possible, to do that, we had to really wait till we knew what the legislature was going to be doing and to have that certainty, because you don't want to give more money than you can afford, right?
Sure.
So anyway, you approved the schedules and you approved lists that had the recommendations for the hires. And then the next day, I believe, or the day after that, Ken sent out everybody that was being asked back their contract or their notice of assignment. And then there was a request to return it by a certain date. And then those show up here for you to sign. So you sign them after the employee has signed them. But we don't give them a signed one by you for them to sign. We give them a blank one for them to sign, and once they sign it, then we give it to you.
In the classified system you go off is the same, for example, that I go off of. You know, you've got state classified employees, different classifications, custodial. Okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what you go off, so I can't say that it's the same that you go off.
But it's the state classified.
I'm not sure.
Classified
system. I don't know what the state classified is. We don't
Okay. Well, you
have any connection with the state employment system.
Okay.
So I know that there's state employees and there's state classified employees. We have nothing to do with that.
Okay, so yours isn't the same. Like we have, you know, we have the AP, the appointed APT, we have classified employees, which, you know, under the state they're considered classified, which is kind of unionized a little bit.
Yeah. No. So I think the answer to your question is no.
Okay.
We don't go off of the state classified system.
Okay.
What's ABT?
Appointment, like professional, technical.
The important thing for both the employees and for the board to know about classified employees is that they get what's called a notice of assignment. It's not a contract. The licensed employees' contracts are a binding contract that's backed up by a lot of state laws. That give the employee certain rights, give the district certain obligations, and it's difficult to change that contract during the course of the year. A notice of assignment says, we plan to hire you as an office manager for this school year at this rate of pay. And it's an at-will position, which changes the nature of the employment relationship to at will. It's not a contract. That's why it's called a notice of assignment. And so the employment arrangement is different with licensed staff and classified staff. We still have all of the laws that we have to follow for any employee. With classified staff, but our arrangement with them is not a contract.
Like we have,
like
the different state procedures, that HR procedures that you have to go through as far as improvement plans and evaluations and that whole process. So I was just wondering, is it the same for us as it is for? It's a little bit cumbersome.
No, it's not. Because it's not a state employment position. It's a local employment position.
Okay.
So every district has different procedures for classified staff.
Are they para-employees?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Did everybody hear that? Are they para-employees? So everybody except outside contractors that works that's on our payroll, independent of position, receives we have to contribute to para for them, and they have to pay towards para.
Yep.
So it's one of the things that often gets overlooked with classified staff. They say, you know, I could be making more at Taco Bell, and that could be true. That, you know, that's true, but they're not necessarily counting what's being paid by the
district for,
which is 21-22% towards their retirement account, which is theirs if they work for a para-covered employer for at least 5 years.
Yeah.
So once they hit that point, all of that money is theirs.
Mm-hmm. Benefit's a good thing to push.
And it's they don't have to keep it in para. Mm-hmm. So let's just say that, you know, they want to move to Nebraska after 5 years. They can withdraw that money times two. So let's say there was $5,000 in there. They can withdraw it, $10,000, and it's theirs. And they can put it into a 401k or some other retirement, not pay taxes, and it's theirs. And so especially the people in the earlier part of their career or that haven't done a lot of serious retirement planning don't understand the value of that contribution. And so Ken and Tammy Myers every fall produce a total compensation summary for all employees that includes that information in an attempt to show them what additional benefits they're receiving that are beyond just their hourly rate. Because there's also the health care, the benefit that they receive that they might not get at Taco Bell. Anything against Taco Bell. Excuse me. But my going back to my original point, just so that you guys understand, it's challenging this year to hire more than in the past. That is a trend.
Yeah.
And
well, and that's the private sector.
As well.
Yeah. And you know, the unemployment rate right now is in Colorado is 3 point something, and it's low, but there still is a significant number of people that are still looking and out in the job market, but they're not either showing up for interviews or they've just decided they're changing their career. And a lot of those are probably are teachers that have teaching certificates and they can't, you know, just don't want to do it. And they don't want to get into financial services either. Just saying.
We're purchasing. Seeing a number of people changing districts for greater pay.
Right.
So one of the things that has always been, but I think it's even more necessary now, is to be a good employer, to be a good place to work. You see, they love working here. So the more that all of us can do to be a good employer, to make this a good place to work, it helps offset, when it's possible, a decision to either stay or to join when the pay isn't as much as other districts. What we've seen over the years is when people just need to make more. There's an employee who was planning to work for us next year that had to pull there because they just couldn't afford it, and they had an offer, $20,000 more. And wanted, starting a family, and just needing to be able to go from a rental to I don't know their particular situations, but this is what we see often. They can't do certain things because even though they appreciate the quality of work life, their broader life, they aren't able to do. So we're seeing more of that this year than we did last year or even in the past. And there was one other thing I wanted to make sure to mention, which is that housing costs are affecting people's decisions more than we've seen in the past. Because there's just less available and everything is more expensive, buying and rental. So where we saw people being able to find things in Castle Rock or Parker and townhomes or renting or whatever, that is even now more difficult. So we've especially people coming from out of state, we've advised them, cost of living here is high. Have you checked it out? You should check it out. And I was talking to one principal who said they had talked to 5 people who all decided against accepting a position because they did their homework on our advice and said, you're right, I can't find a good arrangement because you also have high gas costs. So how far do you go to get a lower housing cost? So more than ever, housing costs are now complicating our challenge in a way that we haven't seen as acutely.
It's true. Okay, cool.
I have a question. Okay. Why do we have so many Valdez Gardens?
Oh, good question.
Runner-ups.
Thank you. You want to answer that?
I feel like a trophy.
I feel like it takes away for the one that had the highest grade point average. I mean, sorry.
Don't apologize. That's a good question.
All right, Craig.
One of the neat things is various institutions, if you're a valedictorian, you get a scholarship of some sort. And so even though you're not the number one in your class, you still may get a full ride at Mesa, for example, because you're a valedictorian. So it's a way to open up the pool for kids to have opportunities to get those scholarships around the country. That's one reason.
Okay.
So anybody above a 4.0 is within that category. Now, we still have a number one, and that was Piper Gustafson.
Right.
So she's still the number one.
Yeah. Yeah, but what is the speech thing? I mean, I understand acknowledging all of the kids.
Maybe one.
But have the top person
one
do the speech,
just to yeah. let.
What's the problem, though?
That one shine. I mean, you took it away. I feel, personally, and I don't know her, and I didn't know, I mean, some of the kids I did, but I felt like it took away from the one that got the highest grade point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's just my personal, I mean, I think it's fantastic.
Took it away from the others.
I think
others
the kids felt that too. I heard from a ton of seniors, like, how many we got this year, 15? Like,
this was low. 9 was low.
I know, 9 right. was.
Yeah.
And
but
no boys.
Been doing this for how
no
many
boys
years?
Either.
And I understand acknowledging them. You know, everybody stand up.
20 some.
You know, but I mean, for the.
Yeah. But I'm still not, like, I can tell you another reason that whether there's a little bit of chicken and egg that happens. So when you have one valedictorian and one salutatorian, you get some dysfunctional behavior on the part of parents and students that impacts the learning environment negatively. Because what you end up doing is having students fighting over tenths of a point every year, all the time, at the end of the year. And how did you gave them credit, and then you have teachers or students going to the teachers saying, I want extra. Or it ends up being a problematic internal discussion as students vie for that, the points.
The top,
because
the top spot.
The top.
So how do they know throughout the year
they
who's
don't.
Who's got what?
Yeah, they
I mean,
do.
GPA.
They,
I mean, they do know?
It's a, yeah, well, the GPA goes up to the last semester. And it's running, so.
But
I mean, how many? How does like? How would I know that your GPA is a tenth of a point higher than mine?
Bragging
just
yeah.
bragging.
He's just
yeah.
talking about throughout yeah. the year. Can yeah. is there? Can I see? Oh, Kara's
yeah.
got me beat.
Yeah, so I'm going to do what I can to.
Because there's credit checks when they find out, and.
But
yeah.
other
that's
students,
individuals.
That's
individuals.
Right.
It's not public.
No.
Right.
So then they were not going to know anyways.
Mm-hmm. Nah. I don't know.
Try the hardest.
My experience has been they know, and these things that I'm describing they happen. So is that the main reason to avoid that? I would say no. It's a benefit to say there's a common threshold which is above a 4.0, and they're all recognized.
And they should be recognized.
Over
and I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But who does the speech?
So I guess I'm asking you guys. You guys are. Redesigning the graduation ceremony?
No, I was asking. I was not saying that we should change this. I was asking why.
You want to shine an extra light on
just for the
it's
the
person
the
who got
they
the top.
Get
yeah.
the
it's to highlight
yeah.
they should get the
students that have achieved above that threshold. And we've done that for as long as I've been here, and giving them each a voice. So it doesn't put the same kind of pressure or intense pressure on one student. I've seen them where they just have, it's actually not even the valedictorian in speeches that does the speech, where they kind of vote on somebody that gives a speech.
No, I wouldn't do that.
And when it's all on one person, I personally really like that we have the different voices, and some of them are good and some of them are okay. They're all relatively short, and every year you get to see a different tone. Sometimes they work together and they've kind of woven a theme together that they kind of play off each other. That was last year. I don't know if you remember,
yes.
Remember that. Some years the speeches are better than others. So it's about a student focus. I mean, the students are kind of leading it. It's their student voice. It's not a speaker, an external speaker. And that's just been our tradition, is to give anybody that achieves a 4.0 or more the chance to make some comments at the graduation. And
do we ever cut it off? Like, what if there's 20 one year?
That'd be a long ceremony.
We have never cut it off.
I don't know whether they've adjusted the amount of time per student based on the number of students, but we finished in an hour and 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Do they have a time?
I mean, it wasn't bad.
Do they have a time?
I was expecting 10 hours.
They have a time limit, and all the speeches are reviewed beforehand, and if they need to revise them, they revise them. So, did I answer your question, or?
Sure. Yeah, I understand everybody is a 4.0 and above, and I get that. I feel like it just takes away from the number one spot, and that was my.
Look at some extra recognition at some point for that.
I don't know.
Shine a light.
So maybe we do something.
I mean, maybe it was more of an announcement.
For that
I know that everybody
person.
Stood up.
Did they get a different color?
Whatever. I just felt like that the young lady that had the highest grade point, because you know when we all grew up, there was only one or two people that spoke, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't all, you know, so.
And they got a longer.
Not that I want to take away from everybody that got a 4.0 or better, but I mean, I still want them acknowledged. I was just asking, why is everybody
top of the top
get like to speak? But okay. It's the way it's always done. We add value to that top person.
It's always been done. You know, in this room here tonight, Craig probably has the most intimate knowledge of behind the scenes and when that decision was made. I know it was in place 13 years ago. It's never been questioned since then. That
it wasn't in place when Brandy graduated.
But I'm basically turning it to Craig to say maybe he remembers when it was changed.
Individual principal can change it up, and I think that was about the time we had a different principal. Dr. Wieman. But even when I was student teaching at Aurora Central, they had multiple valedictorians. So it's been most of the ones I've experienced have had multiples.
Cherry Creek did away with all of theirs, right? All of their valedictorians.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Well, I mean, they just made they didn't want to.
See, that's
to recognize, make all the other students,
oh
I guess,
gosh.
Feel.
If I can interject, I think they went to like a cum laude, summa cum laude.
Oh, did they? Oh.
So that it was still a recognition, but not
gotcha.
The
gotcha.
I don't know for sure if that was Cherry Creek, but I know some of the districts were there.
I think the Cherry Creek stands out in my head. Okay.
For the record, I'm not saying we shouldn't do it.
No.
I was just asking
why.
Because I felt like it took the number one spot away the limelight for that moment, for that young lady.
I think that it would be
that's for
important to highlight one student more?
Yes.
Is that?
I do.
Another time to do that could be senior luncheon. You know, that for the kids, that's always a special day.
Maybe let the
the auditorium to have, I think it's just, I think either way, the valedictorian should get the highest honor, and whether that's something extra they're allotted during the graduation ceremony or whatever, I don't know.
Food for thought. We got a year.
Yeah. We could.
20 minutes are up.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's
good, Rhonda.
Because his face is sitting there waiting on us. Right?
Yeah.
Again, for the record, I'm not against it. Just all say that, okay? Goodness.
Okay. Right. So. Okay, we good?
So I'm going to go ahead and.
Are we not doing the consent agenda?
They are available should there be any discussion during that action item.
Okay.
Otherwise, they're just going to stay quiet, and if there's no questions,
okay.
Back up.
All right.
Just give me one moment.
Right. So I'm going to do the consent agenda first.
Oh, do it first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's next number.
Right. That's okay.
That's
so, consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve 9.1 employment separations, 9.2 extra duty pay, and 9.3 substitutes?
So moved.
Second. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Krumpeller?
Yes.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
Okay. All right, on to action items. Can I get a motion to approve 10.1, accept preliminary 22-23 budget?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All right, roll call, please.
Thank Ron and his team for putting it together in an especially difficult year with lots of additional changes, especially ESSER, and last minute confirmation from the state in terms of what our anticipated outcomes would be.
Thank you for putting it in such an
easy-to-read
format.
Yeah.
just so you know, I'll add my 2 cents here.
Yeah.
This is the format that the state requires that we put it in.
Really?
It's beautiful. I printed every page, and I read it. It's beautiful. Because I did highlight things that I just had questions on, but I answered them myself, actually. Okay.
It comes together in a nice, clean package and everything, but it takes a lot of meetings, discussions to arrive at where things need to change and why, and it takes months to get to this point. And there's just a ton of uncertainty, so I will just repeat that this is the preliminary budget.
And just so you know, it will change from this night. Mm-hmm. It will change to what you get your final one June 27th, I believe it is.
Yeah, thank you. And one of the things that the district is obligated to do after presenting you with the preliminary budget is to post publicly, public notice that we do in the newspaper, that this has been presented to you and it's available for review. And so on. We'll do that after this meeting.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Krumpeller?
Yes.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. The motion to approve 10.2, consideration of resolution to authorize conveyance pursuant to contract to buy and sell real estate.
So moved.
Second. This is the contract. Okay. Any comments or discussion?
I just wanted to ask if there was...
They're on. Yeah.
Mitch, I just wanted to check, did any other offers come in during this time period up until today? Your microphone is not working. Please check your connection.
Mitch, if you can hear us, your audio isn't working. We know that, and we will wait for your response.
Well, Nick's on there, too. I see his phone number.
Or Nick. Or maybe it's our default microwave.
Dang
glass. We can't hear either of you, Nick or Mitch.
I thought we checked that.
We're checking the audio on this end.
Oh, somebody's there.
Hello, this is Mitch. I can hear bits and pieces of you folks. Sometimes I can see your lips moving, but there's no sound.
Okay, so...
Yeah, I'm in the same position as that. But Mitch is here. I am a boy.
Can you hear us now?
There you go.
Okay.
So, why don't you ask?
So, let me ask either of you. I'm.
Waiting for it.
Waiting for it.
Silent again.
Talk fast. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Nope. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
They sent an email. That there was nothing prior.
That there were no.
There were,
oh,
no,
there were
other.
No?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, then.
You know, but I'm going to let them answer it. But they did send that, right? You know.
Mitch, can you hear me? No.
Oh, she's not. She had plugged in.
It's the Bluetooth.
So we did ask them if there was any new information prior to 6 o'clock this evening. So please let us know.
Okay.
And they said that there was
there's
none.
Then I'm fine.
Okay.
Just go forward.
All right.
Okay, how about now?
We're good.
Well, we already got the question answered, I think.
I got it answered.
Any other discussion?
No. Oh, Kristen, you said you're on mute. Oh, now you're on.
Okay, you're on.
Okay.
No questions, correct?
Nope, no questions.
No questions. Okay, if no other discussion, roll call, please.
Sure.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Yes.
Director
Fumbiller? Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. Can I get a motion to approve 10.3, approval of ESSER 3 fund supplemental budget?
Add my 2 cents. This is not approving a supplemental budget for ESSER 3. I did not realize this was on here until I walked in here tonight, and when I talked to Tammy about this, if you remember Carrie and Kim back about a year ago, I asked you, I brought in an assurances form that we're going to comply with all the federal regulations around getting these funds. Tammy received a supplemental amount of money from ESSER 3 that the state had broken off for SPED, and that's what this is. It's just another assurances form.
Okay.
Saying that we're going to comply. It's
so
not,
do
it's
not
approving a budget or anything like that. It's just approving the assurances form. And that basically, I think the motion that was made last time was authorizing the board president to sign this assurances form, because Tammy has to upload this form, same as I did when I originally applied for the funds way back when. So that's what this is.
So what I would suggest then is that there was a motion that was made. Was it seconded?
No. Nothing was made.
No.
Nothing
you
was made.
Asked for a motion.
Yes, I asked for a motion and nothing was...
So what I would suggest is that this is how it was phrased here, is that if you make this motion, that you use Ron's interpretation of what this means in your first and your second in your voting. Right, that you use his explanation for what this means.
Okay.
You okay with that, Ron?
Yeah.
All right. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Okay.
So this is what it said. So you're making the motion, but you understand that it's an assurance or SPED, and it's a part of our reporting requirements, and it authorizes board signature on this required document, and that's what you mean when you're approving this action.
All right, so can I get a motion to approve the assurance that Ron had mentioned and for the ESSER 3 fund supplemental budget, because that's what it is, for board approval, for board signature? Was that?
So moved.
And authorizing the board president to sign it.
Thank you.
Okay. So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
If you want to know what that little bit of money is going to be used for, I can give you a quick explanation.
Cool. We'll do that in discussion. Okay. But so. Okay. Were you ready? All right.
Are you ready?
But anybody else have discussion? Okay. So now, Tammy, you're.
So we just get it's less than $20,000. So we're supposed to use a portion of it just like Ezra 3 that Ron built, just like that budget. We have to use a portion of it for learning loss.
Okay.
And then the other portion for all those things that we've already decided on that are a part of Ezra 3 and on the website for you to look at for what we would spend our money for. So we'll be using it for specifically for tutoring for special education students and then also for some technology that will support our special education students who have difficulty accessing text. So it'll be those reader pens where they can use them to read the text to help those kids who are behind.
Okay. Very good. All right. Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Blanco.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Yep.
Director Frontelli.
Yes.
Director Frazier.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right. No discussion items. BOE planning, we at the board retreat tomorrow, May 24th, and our next board meeting is June 13th. And so I adjourn this meeting at 7:49 p.m.
7:39.
Or 7:39, I'm sorry, thank you. Okay, if I need to read the clock. Okay. Should I?